Front down. Back front up, down. Front down.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, the S stands for hope, and I hope you're ready for an episode about James Gunn's new Superman movie. We're going to spoil it. It's fun.
We're geeks without God.
Hey, welcome to Geeks Without God. It's your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Whoosh.
And Tim Wick.
Da 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 da.
And we're going to talk all about Superman 2025. That's the new one.
Not the official movie title, just.
Just Superman.
Just Superman.
That's how you Google to it to find the right IMDb or the Wikipedia page. Yeah. So obviously we're going to spoil it. Before we get too far into spoiler territory, I think it's safe to say we all really enjoyed this movie.
I did. I really did enjoy it.
I really loved it too. And I have a low tolerance for smash fights where it's just two all-powerful beings smashing each other.
Hard to not do a smashing fight with Superman.
And I still loved this movie. Yeah. I never got bored, which is high praise for me from a DC superhero movie.
It's bright, it's colorful, it's hopeful, it's everything that's been missing from...
The S stands for hope.
...comic booky superhero movies. So we're going to start spoiling it now.
If you haven't seen
it,
movie.
Consider go checking it out. It's probably at a cheap theater by now.
We'll be here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The episode will wait. Okay. Spoilers ahoy.
This is my favorite Superman, the guy.
Yeah.
This is my, I think, honestly, like, this is my favorite. David Corenswet is my favorite Superman. Particularly, similar to how Christian Bale was my favorite Bruce Wayne, because he really played the, like, playboy. Like,
not your favorite Batman, but your favorite.
Not necessarily
Bruce
my favorite
Wayne.
Batman, but this David Corenswet is my favorite, both my favorite Clark and my favorite Superman. Like, genuinely, I think he nailed both sides of the character. I especially liked when he and Lois were fighting and Superman was mad and like saying angry stuff and like getting defensive, which we don't see often. Usually he's just this like, oh, I'm just either he's stoic or like they don't let him show emotion. It was great.
Well, and I mean, Superman is a bit moralistically simplistic, right?
Like Big Blue Boy Scout.
Yeah, truth, justice, the American way. He just wants to do what's right. He doesn't want to kill or hurt people. He just wants everyone to be safe and be happy. And those are very easy things to say in a black and white world with no, you know, war or anything like that. And so, like, I like that we got that Superman. In a world that is more grayscale, and a part of the conflict with him was how he deals with that, right? The interview with Lois, all the politics of getting involved in war. That was fantastic.
Well, I think, you know, and I gotta, you know, right up front, Superman, I've always been meh on Superman. Never been my superhero kink. Like even the Christopher Reeve Superman, I've seen it like once. You know, and it's fine. It's not. I think it's a good movie, but it's not one of those things that I've revisited throughout my life. You know, the way a lot of people revisit those classic movies.
Yeah.
So you know, I'm not going to say that I was apathetic going into this movie. I was optimistic. It sounded like it was going to be a good movie, but it still was kind of like, well, all right, fine. I'm going to go see this Superman movie because I'm a nerd and I want to be able to talk about
it's
Superman.
Not your
movies.
Favorite character, but
right.
But it's yeah.
But the thing to me about Superman is effectively a god, right?
Oh yeah.
Among humans.
Yes.
And what makes Superman interesting is his humanity.
That he was raised by the Kents.
I realize he's not human, but whatever. Anyway, right. And I mean, there is a literal speech about his humanity in this movie.
It is his humanity because it's his adopted. It's his adopted world. It's his family. I mean,
And if Superman wanted to dominate the Earth, it'd be easy.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
He could completely take over the Earth and control it in an afternoon. But he doesn't, because there's a decency there and there's a humanity. And that Lois Lane argument, I think, Molly, is a great example of it's Superman, but it's just a guy having an argument with his girlfriend. Yeah, yeah.
And he's mad because he's like, but I'm doing the right thing. And she's like, but you didn't think about some other stuff. Yeah. And he's like,
yeah.
I think this is really interesting because we've asked that question in our five questions. Since you don't believe in God, you know, where do you get your morals from? Where do you get your values from? And most people have always said their parents.
Kansas.
Or their parents. Smallville. Or the people around them, right? Yeah. But for Superman, truly it is. It's his parents. It's Mom, yeah. Pa Kent. It's growing up, you know, and being taught right from wrong and being treat people well and do good services and use your powers for good. And be a good guy. And like, I think that really, you know, that whole nature versus nurture debate, really, this Superman is a shining example of nurture and how it changes, because that message was like, dominate Earth, take them over, Krypton strong, Earth weak, like, yeah. And it very much like Viltrumites and Invincible, you know, with the like, because how could you not want to dominate worlds and take them over if that is if you are just gods, you know?
It's,
We dominate rabbits. We dominate other creatures we consider to be lesser beings than us, less smart than us, and less strong than us. We you know, take over.
I have two quotes from Grant Morrison, who's written a lot of comics, Superman. American writers often say they find it difficult to write Superman. They say he's too powerful. You can't give him problems. But Superman is a metaphor. For me, Superman has the same problems we do, but on a Paul Bunyan scale. If Superman walks the dog, he walks it around the asteroid belt because it can fly in space. When Superman's relatives visit, they come from the 31st century and they bring some hellish monster conqueror from the future. But it's still a story about your relatives visiting.
Sure.
And then, in the end, I saw Superman not as a superhero or even a science fiction character, but as a story of every man. We're all Superman in our own adventures. We all have our own fortress of solitude we retreat to, with our own special collections of valued stuff for our own super pets, and maybe even our own bottled cities that we feel guilty for neglecting. We have our own peers and rivals and bizarre emotional and moral tangles to deal with. I felt I'd really grasped the concept when I saw him as every man rather than as the dream self of every man. The S is a radiant emblem of divinity we reveal when we rip off our stuffy shirts and our social masks, our neuroses, our constructed selves, and become who we truly are. Batman is obviously much cooler, but that's because he's a very energetic and adolescent fantasy character. A handsome billionaire playboy in black leather with a butler at his back and a beck and call. Better cars and gadgetry than James Bond. A horde of fetish femme fatales banging around his heels and no boss. That guy's Superman's day and night, right?
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
Like, I feel
Superman
that,
works at a newspaper.
Yeah, you know? Right. Yeah.
He earns his money the way he was taught.
Modern world, Superman's going to lose his job any day. Any day.
Tim, you said you don't really care for Superman, and I think it so depends on who's writing, right?
Sure.
And whether or not they understand the character and they understand what are interesting challenges for Superman. Superman having someone to punch is not an interesting problem for Superman.
Yeah.
And there's always the classic, like, oh ho, you can save, you know, person one or person two, but you only have time for one. But like, this movie didn't do, it had a little bit of that with like the war and saving.
But it was on a bigger scale. It was more like, if you save these people, then what does that do for these people? And what does that do for the world? And like, you're starting a war.
Yeah.
It really feels like what was going on here was trying to find ways that Superman didn't have to punch. And that is what makes Superman more interesting, is if he's trying not to use that strength.
Which is, I know that next week we're going to be talking about the Fantastic Four, and I just really quickly want to say that this seems to be a theme going on with superhero movies. Thunderbolts 2, we just rewatched that last night, and it's like, it's not that you... that they can't always use their powers to get out. You can't always punch your way out of a problem, shoot your way out of a problem. Sometimes you got to think. Sometimes none of you can fly, so we got to go back to back and crawl up the tube.
Sometimes none of you can fly, and your superpowers mostly amount to we all have guns.
Yeah. Well, the scene with the giant Pokemon. Is great because Superman is literally like, I am trying to figure out how to not kill this thing.
Yeah.
Well, is it the Justice Guild?
The Justice Gang.
It's so funny.
Justice Gang. Well, they're just like, well, let's fucking kill it.
Yeah.
Because that's that neutralizes the threat, and I think that actually did a great job of identifying who Superman is. That he's like, yeah, this is giant kaiju Pokemon and it's going to kill people and mm-hmm. I gotta stop it from killing people, but that doesn't mean that it
deserves
lacks
to die
agency in itself. It's not its fault that it's here.
Yep.
And he doesn't know it's Lex Luthor's fault, but it's somebody else's fault,
right,
that it's here. And I appreciated that, because Superman is always trying to puzzle through, how do I not have to beat up this guy?
Do the least harm while also doing the most good.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's a conundrum. And I think I saw some very interesting articles, just real briefly touching on the war in the movie, about how all these Zionists are very mad that Superman was saying bad things about Israel and the war against Palestine. And it's like, I don't remember them saying anything. Are you saying you identify with the bad guys in Superman? And that's what it is.
Yeah, I'm like,
I don't think there's any Barovia.
I don't think there's any Israel in that movie. I think it's
Barovia.
Yeah.
Barovia is one of those like placeholder countries for whatever's politically relevant right now when they're writing the comic or the movie, just like Latveria is for a lot of things in Marvel.
And I think it was... probably all written long before that was even happening.
And I would argue
this was probably written for Russia and Ukraine as a metaphor.
I would say the parallel seems more Russia and Ukraine than it does Israel and Palestine. But,
If the shoe fits.
If the shoe fits.
Yeah, if you saw yourself in that, then perhaps you should, rather than judge the movie, judge yourself. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we've been talking a lot about Superman and why we've liked his portrayal and some of the morals and ethics there. I think there's another really great standout performance in this, and I think that Nicholas Holt might be my favorite Lex Luthor.
Yes, me too. I have a soft spot for Nicholas Holt. Longtime listeners will know he's one of my favorite actors, so I knew going in he was going to be my favorite Lex.
So a fun anecdote, maybe you've heard this already. Nicholas Holt originally auditioned for the role of Superman. He went in and did his audition, and when he came out, Cornsweet was there to also audition for Superman, and they exchanged pleasantries, and they said, hey, what's up, or whatever, and Nicholas Holt walked away from that greeting like, oh, fuck, that guy's Superman, huh? And so they cast him as Lex Luthor, and any subconscious resentment he may have had for this other guy getting cast as Superman, he got to bring into that role, and I think that's super fun.
I think it's so good. Like, if there's one defining characteristic of Lex Luthor, it's that he's jealous of Superman.
Or at least resentful.
Resentful. I would say jealous of his power and how everybody likes him and thinks he's so great. It's just like how J. Jonah Jameson is like, why does everyone like Spider-Man? No, he's bad. He's a vigilante. Like, he's obsessed. Yeah.
Bring me pictures of Superman.
I thought he did such a good job. His Lex was, he was controlled. But there were times where you could tell that control was slipping, and I loved his ditzy influencer girlfriend that was, you know, taking all the selfies that ended up being all of his secrets in the background. That he was just able to, of course, that he just, because as brilliant as he is snobby.
Arrogant.
And so he thought that was just some dumb girl taking her dumb pictures, not thinking about what she was actually posing in front of. It was really, really smart.
Yeah, and she's that character has been his right hand, his Gal Friday, and in some instances as superhuman anti-Superman bodyguard, all the way back to like Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor had her as a companion too.
That's awesome.
I mean like, I like when Mr. Terrific is looking at, like, the basically boom tubes that Lex Luthor has invented, and he's like, yeah, in order to make a pocket galaxy, he would have had to do this, this, and that risky thing, which has a small chance of destroying the our entire world or our reality.
But he did it anyway.
And it's just like identifying that arrogance and that power and that brilliance very, very casually kind of fits it all together real well.
So let's talk about Mr. Terrific for a second.
Yeah.
Because Mr. Terrific is a character that I will confess I had no knowledge of whatsoever.
Me neither.
And still don't totally. It's like, is he just brilliant? Is he super powered brilliant? Is he? I don't even know. But what I appreciated about this, that character, is he could have just been look, we got Mr. Terrific for you comic book nerds. Mm-hmm. Isn't that great? And instead, he got some really central plot.
Character development.
Yeah. And character development in the movie. More than Green Lantern, more than Hawk Girl. And I think that was pretty cool that they just were like, hey, you probably don't know who this character is. But he's pretty fucking awesome. we're gonna highlight him for a little bit.
Did you say, Nick, he might be getting his own spinoff?
Yeah. They're looking at maybe giving him his own series or a movie or something. He's a little bit different than other portrayals of Mr. Terrific in the comics. There's been a couple of different Mr. Terrifics. He's not the original guy from like the old JSA days or whatever. He is a chairman of the Justice Society of America in the comics.
Chair.
Because the floating thing. People often compare him to like Batman as like he's a billionaire playboy genius.
Is he a billionaire?
Guy.
I didn't know that.
He's incredibly wealthy. Sure. Whatever it is.
He's a trust fund baby.
or like for Marvel, they might compare him to Tony Stark a bit. The way he emoted and reacted and stuff is not how I necessarily imagined him, but I'm not super well versed in the character, and I liked it. I didn't have a problem with it at all. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
I'm glad he got a second chance at playing a superhero after getting kind of screwed as Darwin in X-Men First Class so quickly.
I think Nathan Fillion's portrayal of Guy Gardner was so good. He plays arrogant prick so well.
Like Captain Hammer.
Like Captain Hammer. Honestly, like to some degree, Captain Mal in Firefly gets that way. But like he leans into the handsome 80s villain, guy like role really well. And I thought his Guy Gardner was both like incredibly arrogant and kind of a dick, but also obviously almost heartbreakingly insecure. Like you could tell that it really mattered to him that everyone thought he was cool. And he was doing the cool guy, like whatever, no one even cares.
What's great about Guy Gardner and this portrayal of Guy Gardner is the thing that makes Green Lantern rings work is just willpower, right? It's just you're able to use your willpower to bend reality and this green light into whatever shape you can imagine, as long as you have enough will to make it a reality. And so, like, willpower isn't necessarily a positive characteristic in every person. the football jock who beat you up in high school and gave people swirlies and was kind of a douchebag probably had a lot of willpower.
somebody who's about to kill themselves with an eating disorder has a ton of willpower.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's
exactly.
Not good.
That takes work.
It takes a lot of work.
So Guy Gardner is a good example of how willpower isn't necessarily a good character. And he was magnificent. All the middle fingers, all the just like tanks, just like bonk, bonk,
big
bonk.
Green middle fingers knocking out tanks.
So just, in character.
Yeah. You know, but he's a little bit the antithesis of Lex in that, I mean, they're both super arrogant. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not as brilliant as Lex, but still.
No.
but he still is not a terrible person, right? He still wants to do the decent thing.
He's trying.
Yeah, he's trying. He's as opposed to Lex, who embraces that he's an asshole. I mean, there's that amazing thing where if Superman's like, it's envy, and Lex is like, duh, you think I'm, I don't recognize myself. I don't care.
Yeah.
I know it's envy. Brilliant. Whatever. Fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah. Is Green Lantern the neutral one? I can't remember how the Lantern Corps goes. Or are they good?
They're space cops. So, yeah. You know, like,
because it's like red, orange, and yellow are the bad ones. Well, and then,
yeah,
blue, it's violet.
It's a little simplistic, okay, but basically, yeah. Yeah, there's a whole bunch of Green Lanterns. Like, okay. Blue is hope and red is rage.
But that's the thing, is green isn't necessarily good. It's just in the middle of the spectrum. It's because willpower goes either way. Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're lawful good.
I really liked Hawk Girl's scream. Yes. I know that's a weird thing, but the scream was inhuman and good. Like, every time she did it, I was just like, oh man, that would be like, everyone do a fear check. Like, heard that, you would have to be like, oh God, like, it would scare you.
That nth metal mace around clobbering motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And of course, her dropping the war criminal at the end, giving him the big drop.
Yep.
Because she's not, they're not Superman.
They're not Superman. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I appreciated that. Showing us a difference between superheroes. And, you know, and right at the very beginning of the movie, the first thing we see, 300 years ago, the first metahumans started popping up, right?
Mm-hmm. That opening.
3,000.
Three centuries.
3 centuries.
Three decades.
Yeah, 3 years.
3 years, 3 months, 3 days, three hours.
Three minutes. Yeah, it was amazing storytelling at the beginning.
That has been done in comics before. I think Alan Moore did that in comics, roughly.
Sure.
James Gunn is like, that wasn't the most original thing, but it worked for us really well.
Exactly what I needed.
But I like that we're jumping into a world where metahumans have basically existed in one form or another for 3 centuries is great. We don't need a world that's new to superheroes as we discover it as an audience. We are well versed in superheroes existing in cinematic worlds at this point. Just throw us in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't need Kal-El being put into an interstellar baby.
We don't need to see the spider bite Peter. We don't need to see the pearls drop in Crime Alley.
And that's
something. That's something James Gunn has said. We don't need to see these things anymore. You know, and I thought about that, and I think it's the right decision. We'll talk about it again, I think, next week when we talk about Fantastic Four too, is this idea that that we don't need to do an origin story anymore. Mm-hmm. That these characters are so much a part of our fabric of knowledge that we know where Superman came from. Mm-hmm. And I, on one hand, I don't know that that is 100% true. There's no guarantee that everybody who goes into that theater knows the origin of Superman, but I think they don't need to see it in the same way that it's already been portrayed. And so going in to the middle of the story and just giving us enough backstory so we understand what's going on was really smart in that knowledge that most people going to this movie don't need that 10-minute origin story on Superman. We don't need the awkward will they, won't they with Clark Kent and Lois Lane.
I loved they were already dating.
Yeah, we want to see these characters at a moment of conflict. And that's what they did, which was really smart.
Anybody who goes to see one of these movies right now and is like, I don't understand. Where did all this, what were they referencing? There's a wealth of knowledge at your fingertips the second you leave the movie. Well, you can go find out. You can read all about it. You can, you know, like, it's very easy.
Or if you're a good storyteller, you can just explain it with the movie as it goes.
And they did, I feel.
And they did. Yeah, absolutely. The Kal-El's message from his parents,
that was,
you know, in the super harem and all that was like, that caught people up who might not, that one person out there who doesn't know Superman's origin story.
The little robots said, oh, it's a message from his parents. It was sent with him when he was a baby. He finds it soothing. But I loved those guys. They were great. Yeah. But also, like, the second it was like, the message cuts off there, but I'm sure that the next thing they were going to say was take care of Earth and protect everyone. Instantly, I went, oh, boy. I was like, I bet
that's not what the message said.
Well, I bet.
And some people were, say they were mad about that change. The people who are very still somehow like restore the Snyderverse and whatnot are like holding up pictures of, you know, oh, the S stands for hope in Man of Steel and comparing it to like start a super harem in the James Gunn's movie. But like, this isn't a new thing for Superman. Very recently, My Adventures with Superman, the animated show, which is fantastic.
It's so good.
It's a very similar Superman to this, right? They just.
Which tells you that's the direction DCU wants to go.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and like even in the most benign Superman origin stories where he is sent to Earth by his parents to protect us and to be our guardian or whatever, the Kryptonians themselves are still a warlike empire that conquers.
Kneel before Zod. Like, right. Yeah.
Yes. So like, like even, you know, even if you're going to say not Mon, not Jor-El, and I can't remember his mom's name.
Ma-El.
Still the rest of the Kryptonians. And
Ma and Pa-El.
How about finally a director brave enough to give Ma and Pa Kent a rural accent?
Yes. Oh my God. Like, but also
they
like,
sound like they're from Kansas.
And they looked it too. Yeah. Like, and also just that it was like his dad just being like, look, like it's not who you are or where you come from, it's what you do. Like who you are as a person is like you are like the sum of your actions, you know, and your actions have always been kind, you know. And I thought that made Superman more interesting.
Yeah.
And that it you know, it's very much like the when Peter Parker gets uncovered as Spider-Man and it's like, oh, the vigilante, we know who he is now. Like, yeah. And he feels like he's being hunted and now no one likes him anymore. You know, that's, it's media. It was a really great, elegant lesson on how media can turn the tide. Everyone was like, we love Superman. He's the best. And then there's like one thing that comes out.
And they're like, you're the worst.
He's the worst. We hate him. I'm afraid of him. Throw a can at his head. You know, like it's just, and it's just how public opinion can shift so fast like that on you. It doesn't matter how much good you've done.
When you have an army of 10,000 in brain enhanced monkeys with access to social media.
That was so funny.
Who can get the hashtag super sucks going.
I don't know why a bunch of people weren't mad that the monkeys were clearly representing them. Because I know exactly what dudes those monkeys are being. Oh,
we all know what those monkeys were and who they were representing for
sure.
So
yeah, was this movie too woke?
I mean, I feel
because Dean Cain, who you know has played Superman, said he felt the movie was woke, which interesting. I think the quotes came out before the movie had been released, and I don't feel like he got advanced screeners.
You mean
maybe everybody who played Superman gets advanced screeners?
Dean Cain, who played a Superman, where in an episode of his Superman show, one of the obstacles that was thrown at him was someone demanding Superman's green card and grounding him for being an illegal alien.
Uh-huh.
And that was like the social message of the episode that he was in his own Superman.
It's possible that he just like didn't read the scripts ahead of time and delivered them line by line. So he didn't absorb.
Yeah.
What was it? Yeah, interesting.
I'm willing to believe Dean Cain can't read.
He acts like someone that
someone off screen just said the line and then he said the line.
Yeah, I'm just going to point out, I believe we've discussed Dean Cain in this this podcast before, and it was in God's Not Dead 2.
Oh my God, that's right.
So, you know.
He's a piece of shit. He's a piece of shit. Yeah. He is. He's a terrible person.
Some interesting stuff as this pertains to the future of DC movies and James Gunn's vision for what they're doing. It seems like the line between what is and is not canon for the stuff that's previously been released is drawn right through Peacemaker. There are things that happen in Peacemaker that are canon, and there are things that happen in Peacemaker that are not canon.
Okay.
James Gunn has said Aquaman is probably not popular or familiar enough with people for Peacemaker to talk shit about Aquaman, for example. Like he fucks fish and all that
that he
talks about in the show. Yet Peacemaker being in the Superman movie as a cameo talking shit about Superman fits just fine with everything else that's happened in Peacemaker.
Nice.
And like all the people that have been cast in those roles and some of like Rick Flagg Jr. dying in the Suicide Squad at the hands of Peacemaker is clearly canonical at this point, and as Rick Flagg Sr. is now in the next season of Peacemaker, which is coming out real soon. That's the next DC thing, is Peacemaker. And if you haven't watched that, it's fantastic.
Oh, real quick, Skylar Gisondo as Jimmy Olsen. He was great.
Yeah.
He was so good.
Rizzed up.
Yeah, a rizzed up Jimmy Olsen is great. Like I very similar to the animated show you mentioned, yeah. My Adventures of Superman.
Little, yeah, a bit.
Where that Jimmy is also like popular and has a
yeah.
But like I love Skylar Gisondo. He was in Booksmart. He was in
Gemstones.
Righteous Gemstones. He's also in that zombie movie, the zombie show with Drew Barrymore and Timothy Oliphant.
Where California Diet or the
Santa Clarita Diet or yeah. whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's great. And that was the first thing I saw him in. And I think he's a phenomenal comedic actor and very good. I thought he did a great job. I liked Beck Bennett as the sports reporter guy who kind of gets left behind a lot. And it's like, how many do we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You can come. Oh, yeah.
Clark's work bully.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, he seemed like a bully. But in that way, like, he doesn't know any other way.
It's a work appropriate bully, right? Yeah. Like he not a bully enough to be an HR moment.
Yeah, they got perfectly slutty Cat Grant. Like, always had her tits out at work. It was great.
So at the end, when it's clear that they all are aware that Lois and Superman have been hooking up for about 3 months, they don't say it, but do we likely believe that they're all also aware that Clark is Superman?
I don't think so.
No, but I was surprised by how many people knew that Clark and Superman were the same person.
They were being real loosey-goosey with it, too.
Because, the whole Justice Gang clearly knows, right? Guy Gardner does give that throwaway line about Clark having hypno glasses, which is something from the older, the Silver Age comics. I don't know if that's meant to imply that's a real thing in the movie or if that's just Guy Gardner pulling some Silver Age shit out of his ass for a joke. That said, the transformation is pretty fucking good. The broccoli top Clark Kent versus slick back Superman.
His curly hair being down and in his eyes, and he also stoops.
Yeah.
He stoops his shoulders forward, and his suit's a little too big, and he kinda hunches a little bit, honestly, that does a lot.
I don't think Jimmy knows.
I think he might suspect.
I don't know.
But he might, if anything, I think he suspects that Clark is hiding something.
Maybe.
But I think he maybe doesn't know what.
I don't know.
And so, yeah. I could see people thinking that maybe Clark's gay or something that.
Sure,
and so
sure.
That's why he's so weird and secretive about it. And they're all like, I don't know why he's being weird about it. He can just be open.
Us.
Like,
yeah.
We don't mind. Like, and that's.
How much of it could just be dismissed as, Smallville? Like, he's from a real small town.
He's from Kansas. He doesn't.
He's a rural guy living in Metropolis.
Okay, corn fed.
Which is apparently in Delaware.
Oh.
We learned in this movie. And a short drive from Gotham.
Millie Alcock as Kara at the end, showing up drunk after her party or hungover after her party on a planet with a red sun.
So Tom King wrote Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow, a comic that was nominated for an Eisner in 2022. It is a masterpiece comic. It should be at the top of your list if you like kind of like heady comics with a lot of dialogue and that comic starts with her leaving Earth for a planet on a red sun to go get drunk on for her birthday. To celebrate her birthday, she's going to go be party girl and get white girl wasted on a planet that's
because
she can't get drunk on Earth
because of the yellow sun.
and things escalate from there. And it ends up being a planet spanning sort of a westerny feel to it, where she's like hunting down a person. There's kind of a revenge angle to it. The comic features Comet, the horse, the super horse, who is a person that was a centaur that was turned into a person that was turned into a horse that might be sentient and it can fly. I don't know, man. Comics are dumb. But it's a really great comic, and Tom King is on the screenplay for the movie, and it seems like they're just going to do a straight adaptation of it, which seems very difficult to me, but I also am incredibly interested. And that movie will also debut Jason Momoa as Lobo, the role he was born to play DC.
Lobo is definitely.
But yeah, that's a great setup for things to come. I that movie comes out next year, and I'm so excited for it.
Every time I think about Jason Momoa as Aquaman, I think about the clip I saw with the reporter going, "Did you have to learn how to swim for the role?" And he just goes, "Bro, I'm Hawaiian." And it's like, imagine asking Jason Momoa if he can swim.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely, like, what a dumb fucking question.
Yeah. Now, I think the thing that really talks to how gutsy this movie is, how willing it is to just be like, fuck it, we're going to go there, is like in the first 2 minutes, you get Crypto.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he's a bad, he's a naughty boy.
He's not like... He's not like a super dog. He's a Kryptonian dog.
Yeah.
With all the shit that implies.
It's so funny.
That now we have a dog with Superman's powers, but it's still a dog.
Like, it's like Crypto. God, stop.
all of the mocap or all the performance capture for Crypto is video of James Gunn's dog Ozo that he has taken over the years of just him being a naughty dog. And that was very much James Gunn's intent. He said, not all dogs are good dogs. My dog is a terrible dog. He's just a real son of a bitch.
Naughty dog.
And I wanted, what would it be like if my dog had superpowers? It would be awful. It'd be terrible. It'd be very funny. And so Crypto pouncing on Superman wanting to play is video of Ozo pouncing on James Gunn's cat.
That's great. I saw
fucking
that
with the cat.
There's a dog actor called Jolene that stood in a lot when they did other stuff. Like, they actually did have a dog there.
Sure.
So it wasn't like pretend this tennis ball is a dog. It'll be a dog later. Like, there was a dog actor there to help with a lot of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, really, really cute. There were so many times I was like, oh man, that's Pimento. Like, just where it's like, where it's like, hey, come here, grab me. Don't, no, hey. Naughty.
Yeah, but I think the thing is that Crypto is such a, it can be so dumb, right?
Yeah.
There's so much in comics that works because it's comics. And you're like, well, I'm going to go do a live action movie. Is Crypto something that's really going to work?
Yeah.
And it easily couldn't have worked, but I think that the smart move of making Crypto just a regular dog that would make Superman's life miserable because it's also a super dog.
Yeah.
I also think they did a great job with the trailer for this movie. I only saw one because I try not to watch more trailers if they come out. But the one I saw, he's just like, Crypto, and Crypto comes, and he's like, take me home, and Crypto just takes him home. They didn't show any of the funny stuff of Crypto being naughty. They let that be a secret that you find out when you see it, which made it so much better. They could have made the trailer like, oh, he's a funny guy, and that they didn't need to. Like, so when you see the trailer, you're like, oh, Crypto comes when he's called, and then he grabs his cape and he pulls him home, right? Yay, Crypto's such a good boy. And then you're like, oh, this is way funnier. Like, he's like, no. Like, and then also, like, they showed all kinds of clips of the movie, but nothing, I feel like nothing was given away. They didn't give away any of the plot. Like, you didn't know about the pocket dimension. You didn't know about, there were so many things. So many times trailers these days, I feel like they show the whole fucking movie, including the denouement, and to make it like I have to be tempted with candy and jingling keys to come see a fucking movie. Like, if I don't know how it ends, I won't go.
Yeah. Favorite moments.
Yeah.
As we wrap up here, think about what was a favorite moment. There's a lot of great stuff in the movie, but
I'll start.
Yeah.
My favorite moment is when Superman comes crashing the fuck in to Luther Corps and is like, where's the dog? He's like, what dog? He's like, fucking don't eat. And he's like flipping tables. He's like, where is the dog? He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then he takes that sip from his mug. And while he's sipping, he's like, stupid looking little dog in a cape. Ugly little dog in a cape. Yeah. Just like under his breath, because he knows that Kal-El will hear it because he's got super hearing, and he just barely mutters it in a way that the video that his girlfriend is taking won't show it. And like, yeah, just, because the whole point is get Superman looking like the monster we're painting him as on camera. He's going to show up and look like he's, you know, yeah, it was great.
I don't think it's made clear in that scene that, yes, Superman is worried about the safety of Krypto and his you know family dog or whatever, but that's his cousin's dog, and if she
dog sitting,
and if she comes back and that dog is hurt or missing, humanity's in a lot of trouble. Yeah. They would much rather deal with Superman looking for that dog than her looking for that dog, because that is going to be a messier situation.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked a lot about some of my favorite scenes. I'll just say the pocket dimension prison, which strangely, how could they have known when they were making this movie how relevant that would be
to the current political landscape
to have this secret prison that
full of reporters
the government allows
and ex-girlfriends.
The government allows a private citizen to just ship people off to and leave there.
Yup.
Wow.
And it was like for any reason.
Yeah.
Like one of them was like, one of Lex's ex-girlfriends
who wrote a blog post
who he was mad at.
Yep. there's a journalist in there too.
Sound familiar?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Probably a comedian that wrote a joke he didn't like about him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That was great. I don't know what the fuck Mr. Handsome is. That was the ferryman in that other dimension. Other than a creation of Lex's, but that was fucking creepy. Metamorpho was we didn't really talk about him. He's great.
He's a good Metamorpho.
One of my favorite parts of this, I mean, so much of what we talked about already, but the action scene where Mr. Terrific and I think he's with Lois, they arrive at the tents for the boom tube that Lex is operating, and he and his T-spheres like put her in a little protective bubble with the music playing, and the T-spheres just fucking ruin the day of like 50 of those raptor soldiers, and they are comedically getting tossed around. One sphere will hit one of them and they'll go up in the air, and while it's midair another one will come down and hit him across the side, and he's just kind of casually walking and doing his thing for most of it. And like it was a great funny action sequence set to some good music. Very James Gunn. I like that a lot.
It made me think of in Guardians of the Galaxy with the arrow. Very similar to the arrow just going through and just fucking killing everyone.
That was definitely a James Gunn
through.
Moment.
Yep.
If you don't like James Gunn, you probably won't like this movie.
You don't like James Gunn, don't listen to our podcast.
Yeah, that's right. You people who have been listening to us for years, fuck off.
Yeah, Ron.
Fuck off, man.
Ron,
we're liking a DC movie.
You need to like fun and touch grass.
Yeah.
The last time I asked Ron if he had seen this yet, he said, not yet. I'm going to see it in a couple weeks. I'm busy and stuff, and it's like, all right, Ron. It's not grimdark. I'm eager to hear what he, our resident Snyder apologist.
Can't wait to hear what he thinks of this movie.
Yeah. Well, so a fun, hopeful, bright, colorful superhero movie for everyone to enjoy. Also, you know, before we go, I want to thank, we have a new Patreon patron, Cynthia. Thank you so much for your support, Cynthia. We really appreciate it. You help keep the lights on, I guess. Yeah, sure, the lights on. If you want to support us on Patreon, you can find us there as Geeks Without God. Just a couple bucks, and we will get you all these episodes up as soon as they're done editing. Sometimes it's weeks early.
Do it through a website. Don't do it through your Apple phone.
Don't do it through your iPhone.
Don't do it through your iPhone. They do a weird thing.
Apple takes a cut, apparently.
And the app is weird. And just go through a web. It's just shitty. Go to the website on your browser.
It's so easy. Browsers still work.
Yeah. Let us know what you thought of Superman and what you're looking forward to in the DC universe ahead with James Gunn at the helm. Otherwise, we'll see you back on a future Tuesday with more geeky godless fun.
Bye.
Bye.
Da 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 da. Geeks with geeks without God. We're geeks with geeks without God. We don't. recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks,
we're geeks,
we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
we're geeks, we're geeks without God.
We're geeks,
geeks without God.
We didn't even talk about the score, which